And you know, it's so gratifying to be in such a loving and supporting church. And Swell and I appreciated the encouragement you gave to her. It's important that our young people know that we do pay attention, we do care, and we are vested in their success. For sure, that means a lot to me, and that is the kind of church that it's a pleasure to serve in. So I just wanted to say that. I'd also like to say to Dick, you cannot speak before me again because you've used some of my material, man. Come on, that's not how we roll. Ooh, okay. I think I heard a slight echo. Okay. It's frequently said that the one constant is change, which is a bit of an oxymoron, but it's also true. What I like about change is that it can be a synonym for hope. If you are willing to take a risk, what you're really saying is, I believe in tomorrow, and I will be a part of it. Linda Ellerbe said that. My friend Andy Laws said this. He said, unless you are prepared to give up something of value, you will never be able to truly change at all, because you'll be forever in control of things you can't give up. I changed that a little bit. I like to say, unless you are prepared to give up something that you're comfortable with, you'll never be able to change. And George Bernard Shaw said, progress is impossible without change. And those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything. So as you figured out, I'm going to talk about change today. When you think about your life, it's a bit of a cliche, but it's worth just thinking about and pondering for a second. Every decision that you have made in the past has got you right where you are today. So your life, the things that you have done, the choices that you've made, play a direct role in where you are today. You think about just today, for instance. Maybe you got up early. Maybe you got up late. You could have said, you know what? I don't feel like going to church today. And you could have stayed at home. So what are we talking about? Change. The title of my message is, I'm going to cross the Jordan, and I want you to come with me. I'm going to cross the Jordan, and I want you to come with me. Things will change. They always do. And we will have to do things differently than we have done in the past, as people and as a church. Now, that can be drastic for us, especially if we're used to playing it safe or we're not used to venturing outside our comfort zone. But I'm going to make the case to you that our very walk as believers will require us to step outside of our comfort zone. Our end goal in life is to be as much like Yeshua, Jesus Christ, perfection, as we can. But when we think about us as individuals, we all have quirks. We have bad habits. And if we're honest, we like some of the bad habits that we have. Whether it's we eat some things that we know maybe we shouldn't eat, or we eat too much of it. We have some friends that we probably shouldn't have. We have some TV shows that we probably shouldn't watch. We have those things. And those are just examples. How many of us, when we hear a really inspiring sermon, say to myself, I need to pray more. But then we don't do it. I need to read more. But then I don't do it. So that is why we need to change and do some of those things that maybe we know we need to do, but we are not willing to step out of things that we're comfortable with. I'm going to start in Genesis 15. Now, I spoke on this last week, and that's kind of where I decided to go over some of these things so we understand the importance of being willing to change and take big steps and do things differently in order to achieve a vision. In verse 1 of Genesis 15, it said, after this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. But Abram said, Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him. This man will not be your heir, but a son of your own flesh and blood will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. And Abram believed God, and he credited it to him as righteousness. When Abram got that vision from the Lord, it inspired hope in him. It said, he believed him. And that's how it starts. Change. Hope. Because if you do not really believe that you can do something, if you really don't believe that God can do something for you, you won't be willing to make the change and the sacrifice to achieve that vision. And what do I mean by sacrifice? In order to change, many times we have to sacrifice something. Abram demonstrated that right away. God showed him in verse 9 when he said, so the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. Abram brought all these to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut in half. Then birds of prey came down on the carcasses, but Abram drove them away. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and a thick, dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, know for certain that 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and they will be enslaved and mistreated there. I want you to realize that the first thing God is going to tell him about where he's going to take him is bad news. This doesn't sound good. You don't have any offspring, but I'm going to give you offspring, and they're going to be enslaved. Is that a good sales pitch? But God keeps it real, and we need to keep it real too. Sacrifice is involved with change. You look at anything in this Bible, for our Savior, Jesus Christ, to redeem us, there was a whole lot of sacrifice. And again, like Dick pointed out, that was in the works before the foundation of this world. It wasn't an accident. They weren't careless with our salvation. So this is planned out. In verse 14, he says, "But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your ancestors in peace and be buried at a good old age." When we drop down to verse 18, this is where sacrifice comes in when it comes to the opportunities that God puts in our life. On verse 18, it says, "On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, 'To your descendants, I will give this land,'" the land that he's in right now, "'from the Wadi of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates.'" You know, Aaron and I talked about this, and he said, you should give an infographic about how big the promised land really was. Because I want you to understand what was promised to Abram and what the children of Israel received was far less than the promise. That's something that I don't know if we talk about enough, because God has given us so many promises in this book. And sometimes I feel like the people of God, we scrape the bottom of the barrel and we think that that's enough and that that's all there is. But when the Messiah was here and he said, "I came so that they can have life and life more abundantly," we like to limit that sometimes. We like to limit that, well, when Christ comes back, then we'll have life more abundantly. So what do I mean that they did not get everything that was promised to them? It wasn't God who was unfaithful in those things. It's just like salvation. When the Passover lamb came down and sacrificed himself, he gave salvation to everybody on this planet, every son and daughter of Adam and Eve. They have that opportunity, and it's free for everyone. You just have to reach out and get it. So it's the same thing with this promise. And we will read that they did not want to change. They got in their comfort zone. So they could not take everything from the Wadi of Egypt to the river Euphrates. I was looking at the map today. So we're talking about a huge chunk of the country of Israel, all of Jordan, most of Syria, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon. So when you look at the map and you see all those countries together in the Middle East, that's what the children of Israel were entitled to. God does not lie. And he had that for them. So I want us to stop looking at them. It's always easy to look at them and say, "Oh, Adam and Eve did this. I wouldn't have done that. Look at Samson. He did this. I wouldn't have done that. Oh, look at those stiff-necked Israelites. I wouldn't have done that." I want you to put that into your mind. Because God has made promises to you too. Not just salvation. He talked about life more abundantly. Guess what? We're talking about church more abundantly. We've gotten lazy and used to
Well, we don't have to really go out and do things and call people in because that's the minister's job, or only God can do that. And he said, little flock. That okay. God delivered his promise. He did exactly what he said he would do for the Israelites. He sees so far ahead that they are now over 1 million strong, and they're in Egypt, and they're about to be freed by Moses. So if we go to Exodus 3, we're going to pick up the story. I'm going to start in verse 7. You know, many times we read the Exodus story and we start here. Like if God just one day woke up and was like, oh my, the Israelites are being mistreated. No, it was part of the plan. That sacrifice, that 400 years sacrifice had a purpose. So in verse 7 of Exodus 3, the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers. I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hands of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, flowing with milk and honey. The home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of Israel, the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. When we want to think about the Israelites, I want us to think about us in that situation right now. Where they are, God is saying, hey, there's better than this for you. Now, I want to remind you, for 400 years, they've been enslaved. Their children have been murdered by Pharaoh. Remember when he said, okay, all these male children, I want you to kill them. Right? So just so you know, they're being beaten. They're making bricks without straw now. And they're suffering. And God has something good for them. So you would think this is an opportunity that they would jump at. Right? Because he said, well, wait a minute. If I was in that situation, of course I would jump at that opportunity. That's when we read the Bible and we take ourselves out of the story. What I'm asking you to do today, church, is put yourself in the story. Be the Israelite. Because you're going to learn about yourself that way. What do I mean? Well, the truth about the Israelites, it's easy for us to talk about them because we look at them like, I can't believe they were that stupid. They did so much dumb stuff, I can't even read it because the sermon would be too long. But I can give you the high points. See, when Moses first came to them to say, okay, guess what? I am going to work with God, and we are going to get you free. They told him, no. We're happy here serving the Egyptians. Did you know that? And we wonder why when Christ says, I came to give you life more abundantly, and we scrape the bottom of the barrel, oblivious to just everything that's out there, we don't realize how much we give up. See, they were comfortable. Remember when they had their freedom? I read that last week. When they had their freedom, they started reminiscing about the good old days in Egypt. Remember, when we were in Egypt, they had flesh pots, and we had meat. What? You also had chains and work from sunup till sundown, and your kids getting killed. You didn't own anything. You were property. Oh, wait a minute. How about this? Moses, why did you bring us out here in the desert to die? You should have left us in Egypt. But I'm not talking about the Egyptians today. I'm talking about us, because we do the same thing. Now, how does that work? God opens doors for us, but we have to change to walk through them. In Numbers 13, we'll see how that works. And, you know, we think things change. You know, Dick mentioned a couple of papers that came out and people signed their names to it. Same thing happened here. What do I mean? In Numbers 13, starting in verse 1, it says, "The Lord said to Moses, 'Send out some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites.'" See, God is ready to start with his process. So at the Lord's command, Moses sent men out from the desert of Paran. All of them were leaders of the Israelites. So these are important people. You think about how many Israelites there were. Not many of them get their name in the Bible. And it gives all of their names, just like all those people signed all those documents. So from verse 4 to verse 15, you see all the names. And in verse 16, it says, "These are the names of the men Moses sent to explore the land." So they explored the land. And in verse 26, they come back with this report. Remember, we're talking about reports? It said they came back to Moses and Aaron and to the whole Israelite community at Kadesh. There they reported to them, and they showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. "We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here's the fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, the Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea along the Jordan." Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we certainly can do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than us." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours the living. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, and we seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them." Let's go right to verse 14. "That night, all the members of the community," I'm sorry, chapter 14, "that night, all the members of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Aaron and Moses, and the whole assembly said to them," wait a minute, there was one time they complained that I forgot to tell you about. Let's read about it now. "If we'd only died in Egypt or in this wilderness, why did the Lord bring us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt? They asked each other. We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt. Yep, that falls in line with all the other bright ideas they had. Now, before you start laughing at my humor, remember I said I'm talking about us. It's like, uh-oh, they don't like my sermon now. I went from smiling in the audience to, I want you to think about this. I want you to think about these types of situations in our lives. Because when Yeshua came to bring us a better life, to give us promises, it's exactly these types of situations that we get into. We have to give up something. Something that might not even be good, but we're comfortable with it. Habits, how we spend our time, people we like, maybe financial decisions, in order to do something better. And some of these things might be inherited or learned behavior. Whether it's drinking too much, alcoholism, the list is so long, and believe me, I'm not trying to pick on any particular issue. When I pick on an issue, you guys know I'm direct and I'll talk about the issue, but there are just so many things that we've been damaged by in this world. But we have a way out through Yeshua, through his word, through his guidance, to have a more abundant life. I believe anyone that calls on the Father God can have a more abundant life if we obey what he says. And if the book doesn't do that, why are we here? Because we might not have this exact situation. No, I don't think anybody in here came from 400 years of direct slavery. And you didn't walk through the desert and see God part the Red Sea, but you've seen him part situations in your life. I come to this church and every Sabbath, we have testimonies about what God has done. So we've seen his active and powerful interaction in our lives. In this small church, each of us have testimonies about what God has done. So just like the Israelite had those testimonies, we have them too. But we also know about things in our lives that we need to change. We also know that God has given us opportunities to do better, just to have a better life. And it doesn't have to be everything at once. God didn't just take them and say, hey, take the whole land. He even tells them, hey, I'm not going to give you the whole land at once. It's going to be too much for you to manage. It's going to be empty and wild animals will take over. Well, I'm not going to do it that way. So even when he's God, he didn't just say, okay, Abram, I'm going to give you this land and bam, there it is. He explained to him the process. We know the process. And there's going to have to be some sacrifice. Yeah, you're going to have to take it bit by bit. That's going to make it doable for you. So these people, because they did not want to change, they were comfortable in the desert. Did they really say that? Yes, they did. They really said that. Shouldn't we pick a leader, choose a leader, and go back to Egypt? Wow, okay. I'm going to give you a disclaimer right now, okay? You guys have said, oh, yes, Steve, we like how he speaks and he serves when we ask and things like that. So let's make him an elder. I'm not the leader to take you back to Egypt. I just need to make that disclaimer because we're going to see some leaders here who say, you know, I don't care about the long list of people that co-sign to this story that's giving you falsehoods. You know, we call that fake media now. It ain't change. I mean, you got to remember, these people, in the King James, it says they were princes in their tribes. So these were well-respected men who came from good families and lineages and had credibility to their name. And they still spouted out this garbage. Oh, we can't do it. They're giants. This is how it got so bad. That's how bad it got. So they do this. They want to choose a leader to go back to Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephthun, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite community, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and he will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid." Let me tell you something. God thinks big. And we limit him because our minds are finite. When God was talking to Abram, even Abram limited God. He said, "I'm going to give you your descendants all of this." He said, "Well, I don't have a descendant." Which is a fair question, because for us, it's like, okay, how did I get to point A to point B? I mean, it's a fair question, but still, it's like, if God said he's going to give your descendants, guess what? You already have one. I mean, seriously, if God says something, it's automatic, right? It's like, let there be light. Right. But this was big, because he's talking about 400, 500, 600, 700 years down. Remember, I went over it. I mean, when he made this promise of where we are right now, about to step into the land, there's no Isaac. And Isaac got to get a kid, right? Then there's Jacob, and he has to have all his kids. Then Joseph, which was the last one or one of the last ones, he has to go get enslaved, get accused of rape, go to jail, become a leader. And then the 72 of them eventually matriculate to Egypt. And they have to multiply so many that by the time that they leave, they are a million strong. Mixed multitude, 1.5, they estimate. Okay. And they walk across the desert to this land. So that's how long, and that's how big, and that's how far out God can see. So when he makes promises, when he speaks to you to tell you what is possible in your life, don't dismiss it. You don't have to know the how. Just say, "Oh, okay, what do you need me to do?" You know? For Abraham, all he had to do was aim at the right target. Sarah, not Hagar. Okay? We have grown-ups in the room. All these people have to do is cross the Jordan and take the land. Do not be afraid of the people of this land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them. What these Israelites, and sometimes we don't understand, those obstacles were not really obstacles. Back when he promised it the land to Abraham, he said, they're just staying there because their sin hasn't been filled yet. So these bad people, the reason they were big and bad and strong is they were being protected by God to keep the seat warm. And that's in your Bible. So any obstacle in our way, individually or as a church, it's okay. God can move it. But that inspiring speech did not work. unfortunately, but the whole assembly talked about stoning them. Sometimes it's tough being a leader and saying, "Thus says the Lord." So that did not work. Things got so bad that God was about to destroy all of them and said, "You know, Moses, you and Caleb and Joshua, you know, I'll make a tribe out of all of you. Okay? We don't need these people." But in verse 26, God had enough. He said, "The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, 'How long will this wicked community grumble against me? I have heard the complaints of these grumbling Israelites. So tell them, as surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do the very thing I heard you say. In the wilderness, your bodies will fall. Every one of you, 20 years old and more, who was counted in the census or who has grumbled against me, not one of you will enter the land.'" I want you to think about this. Their death sentence was something they uttered. They were the ones who said, "It would be better if we died in this wilderness." God said, "Okay." And you're thinking in your head, wait a minute. They had a land flowing with milk and honey, right? I don't even like milk or honey, but it sounds good. I'm like, count me in. You know, so you guys can have the milk and honey. I like imagining those grapes that were like this. They had grapes like this big. Give me that. That's what you give up to die in the wilderness? But that's what happens when we don't have hope, when we don't see that vision, when we don't trust God. I love where our church is right now because I see so much promise and so much potential. Yeah, we have to work. We're going to have to do things differently. It's across that Jordan. We can't be like your standard boring church of God. Ugh. Oh, I'm sorry. I come from 7 generations of Sabbath keepers. I'm not saying that to brag. I don't want to end up like Moses and Aaron with y'all stoning me. Okay? My kids are my testimony. They'll tell you I don't play. But I'm serious about this. I'm tired of the Sabbath-keeping churches just playing churches. Not developing leadership. Not developing speakers. Not taking praise and worship seriously. Not helping their members, like truly helping their members when they need it. Not praying and protecting for each other. That has got to change. With the message we have, I mean, we preach the truth and we speak it out of the Bible. How can that not be blessed if we really live it and work it? God is not a liar. God is not a liar. I think we're going to change lives in this church. And I think we're going to call more sons and daughters to Jesus Christ. We don't need to lean on the crutch of the old days. Well, I'll have my minister speak to you. If you come here every week, you should be able to tell somebody what God has done for you, about the testimonies in your life. You should be excited to come to church and feel love here. If you are not excited to come to this church, if you don't feel love here, you probably shouldn't be here. You should go somewhere where you feel excited and love. I'm excited. I look forward to coming. I look forward to speaking with you, seeing you. Anytime Aaron asks me to speak, well, not anytime, but a lot of times Aaron asks me to speak, I'm excited to give you a message. I have to do my part. So back to these people grumbling because God is telling them, hey, you have to change. Yeah, I know you see those cities. I know you see those giants. But Joshua says, their protection is gone. Okay, so I hope we don't have anyone in this audience that wants to stone me and Aaron and go back to Egypt. Because bad things happened to them. They got everything they wanted. They got everything they wanted. So, it says, as for your children that you said would be taken as plunder, I will bring them in to enjoy the land you have rejected. I want you to get this promise, okay? It's just like salvation. It was there, and they rejected it. So I want you to think long and hard about what you are rejecting in your life. See, I don't know. That's different for all of us. And I'm not speaking down to you. I include myself right there with you. I have been a rebellious, stupid Israelite wanting to run back to Egypt instead of embracing those super big grapes and the milk and the honey. We need to do everything with God, no matter how good the idea is. You want to make sure that God is the one that put it there. You know, when God rejected them, well, when they rejected the land, you know, they had to change their heart. They said, wait a minute. What we did was kind of dumb. Let's go take the land. But Moses said, no, 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 no. It's too late for that. In verse 39, you know, Moses told him everything that God was going to do. And when Moses reported this to all the Israelites, they mourned bitterly. Early the next morning, they set out for the highest point on the hill country, saying, now we are ready to go up to the land the Lord promised. Surely we have sinned. But Moses said, why are you disobeying the Lord's command? This will not succeed. Do not go up because the Lord is not with you. And you will be defeated by your enemies. What? What? You know, that's human nature for you, right? It's like God is telling you, go take it, go take it, go take it. No, we don't want it. He's like, okay, fine. You don't want it? Don't take it. That's like, we're ready now. The idea of dropping dead in the desert no longer seems appealing. But they didn't listen. They tried to take it by their own strength, and they failed. I think this story is powerful because when we look at this story, we're seeing a lost opportunity for an entire generation of people. And truly, when we look at them, we see repeated lost opportunities over and over. So by the time they actually achieved the vision, what they received was so much smaller than what was promised. I believe the promised land for today's Christian refers to God's call on each and every one of our personal lives. For a Christian to fully surrender their entire life to God, I believe that God will place a specific call on you, each and every one of us. But it might take years. Remember, the promise came from Abraham so long ago. It may take preparation. It's going to take sacrifice for us to be ready for those calls. But once that call comes, and I think we all have callings, right? Like we used to say back in the day, God called me. That's what they'd say, right? God called me. Okay. God called you. So you have a calling. What was that calling? Was it to come sit in a church and just get comfortable and do nothing? Do nothing, Church of God? We don't have that one yet.
We do, but it doesn't go by that name.
Ouch. Here's the problem, why some people get cold feet. I think we get too focused on all the negative possibilities, right? What would my family say? What would my friends say? What would this mean for my job? I've seen so many situations where the Bible already tells you what to do, but we're focused on the negatives. Let me put it to you another way. The cities are fortified, the people are giants, and the land devours them. Same thing. Let me put it another way. Our church is too small. We're way out in the country. I don't know. Pick something else. We have to hear Steve speak. But faith does not rely on facts. It's time to shine. Facts can deter your faith, but you shouldn't let it. The 10 spies had the same facts that Caleb and Joshua had. The exact same thing. So, yes, the cities were fortified. Yes, the people are big. They're looking at the same thing, but they weren't looking at the same God. So I'm hoping that all those testimonies that you tell me, okay? Sometimes y'all spend way too long testifying, in my opinion. But that's a good thing, because if you spend that long testifying, that means you got some proof, so you're not looking at the same God that somebody that does not have that testimony is looking at. There's no way that somebody that's testifying in church can't see a vision when God lays it out there. There's no way that somebody who has seen that God work in their life can't interpret facts in a different way to say that, you know what? They're not going to devour us. We'll be victorious. Do you have that testimony or not? So God has already mapped out the plan, just like he did for Abram. He has already mapped it out in your life. The giants and the strongholds that you are seeing have already been dealt with. God allowed them to see exactly what was going on before they went into it. But sometimes he doesn't. Guess what? It doesn't matter. It's the same God. My question for you today, this Sabbath, are you ready to shine?